This session is 90 minutes long, and we ask that both audience and presenters to keep within the framework of that time so we can allow for the next session to start on time. As a courtesy to other presenters and our attendees, we ask that immediately after this session, you clear the room and speak outside so other presentations can begin preparation for the next session. You probably already know why you're here, but a little brief explanation of the panel you're about to hear. Mormonism is more than a religion. It is a cultural identity that encompasses nearly every aspect of an individual's life. It can be a dazzling experience to be a willing part of that fold. However, if you choose to leave, what happens to your identity? Can you remain an ethnic Mormon even after your faith subsides? Are you still rooted in the tradition you elected to leave? This panel, consisting of former Mormons, would answer a resounding yes to those questions. Their Mormonness does not cease simply because they are no longer members of record. A brief bit of information on our panelists. I do apologize. The panel registration or the schedule shows that there are four panelists. One of our panelists had some work and family conflicts and was able to get away, so it will just be myself, Anna Lynn, and Emily. I formally resigned from the LDS Church for myriad reasons in August 2014. I am a tenured professor of anthropology at the College of Southern Nevada and also an administrator for the online group Mormon Feminists in Transition. Anna Lynn has a love of studying and history that led her to a faith crisis in 2009. She resigned from the LDS Church in December of 2014. She is a recent graduate with a master's in economics. And Emily currently lives in the San Francisco Bay Area, making California her seventh state of residence. Despite her inactivity in the LDS Church since July 2010 and official resignation in January 2015, her Mormon identity has been a constant companion. So just to give you a brief overview of where we're going to go today, we are first going to hear from Anna Lynn, and then Emily, and then myself. And in keeping with this panel, trying to make it more interactive and very informal, we are going to stay seated at the table. And although we prefer for questions to wait until the end, where we'll have about 30 minutes or so, if you need just to ask a question right in that moment because it's so important, we're totally open to that. Thank you for coming.
Can you guys hear me okay? Okay. First of all, I want to thank you all for coming out to our panel this evening, and I am so grateful for the opportunity to sit with these two women and talk about our stories and talk about what Mormonism means to us. For me, one of the most painful aspects of navigating leaving the church and my faith crisis has been almost kind of a sense of a loss of the cultural and spiritual heritage of Mormonism for me. A little bit about me. I was born into a covenant. I grew up in the church. My dad was adopted by a strong believing Mormon family who still has very close ties to the Mormon church today. My mom converted to the church when she was 16 years old from a fairly non-religious family. So my mom's side of the family are still fairly non-religious. And while I lived in Utah for a bit of my childhood, I mostly grew up in a small town outside of Las Vegas. So I kind of did not grow up in Zion. I grew up kind of in the border there. There was a lot of Mormons, but still we were, you know, we had to learn how to make friends with a lot of non-members, and, you know, a lot of my core group was people who weren't in the church. I was a typical Mormon girl for a long time. I was baptized at 8 years old by my dad in Hurricane, Utah. I served in various callings in young women, starting from Beehives, and I received my young woman's medallion in high school. I sang in the church choir. I graduated from seminary. And I decided to make the trek up to Idaho to go to college, not to go to BYUI, but to go to a little school on the west side of Idaho. There I attended institute classes. I was active in my ward. Even at one point in time, I hold 3 callings in the singles branch. I was a firm believer in the teachings of the church. I knew the church was true. I knew the gospel was right. For me, one of the biggest influences of the church was the story of Joseph Smith. I was taught that at 14 years old, he had questions and enough faith to receive those answers. And I had no doubt in my mind that God would also answer my questions if I had enough faith. Graduating from college in 2009, I started a new chapter in my faith journey. I desperately wanted to figure out what God had in store for me. And even though I was an active, believing Mormon, I still wasn't, and, you know, I participated. I had the callings, and I did all that. There were still aspects of me that were a little bit different. I wanted to do postgraduate work. I wasn't really interested in getting married, and I didn't want to have kids. But these differences didn't shake my faith. I knew God loved me and that he would let me know what he wanted for me and that I had to roll the play as his daughter. And while struggling to reconcile this role of a Mormon woman being a wife and mother and this belief that God had a different path for me, I was sexually assaulted by a man that I met at the temple. This event just shook my faith down to its very core, and I had to start all over, and it started my faith crisis. Once I started questioning why this had happened to me, the questions about the role of women and my place in the church started to come into sharp focus. And my faith was shaken, but I was determined to do what the prophets had promised and hold on to the iron rod. I lasted 2 years, praying, fasting, and studying the scriptures and the words of the prophet before I fully left the church, before I stopped believing. One of the huge losses is from leaving the church is kind of this loss of the Mormon community and my place in this community. I still consider myself Mormon. I know the stories. I share the stories. These stories are a part of my history. A lot of my experiences growing up and even in this time right now in my life kind of get filtered through the spiritual language of Mormonism that I was taught in my childhood. Today I have 2 active Mormon friends besides my parents who are still active in believing that's talked to me since I left. My non-Mormon friends and those who have left the church soon after I did or around the same time are the only ones who remained in my life after my faith crisis. While I don't follow the outward teachings that define Mormonism, I feel a bit outside in the secular one as well. When I talk to non-Mormons about certain aspects of my life, I feel like they have to give them the Mormonism Primer 101 so that they can fully understand where I'm coming from. And I've worked really hard to build relationships with people like Jennifer and Emily and other people who I know who have left the church. And again, it comes from my need and my desire to be in a community of people who grew up with the same background, who knows the same stories, who share that same history with me. There's a culture and histories and stories that we all share as Mormons, as progressive Mormons, as ex-Mormons. Mormonism is so much more than a set of beliefs, and I'm still a part of that. I grew up learning about the faith and sacrifice of pioneers. I honor the sacrifice, resilience, and faith of my ancestors to come across the plains in search of a better life. I honor the pioneers like my mom, who joined a new religious tradition and taught that faith to her children. And I honor the pioneers like myself, who have the courage to leave the church when there is so much at stake. I have stories of girls' camp and young women's and single adulthood. I don't believe anymore, but I am still Mormon. I hope that one day Mormonism opens its tent to include room for people with questions, doubts, and unbelief. It's hard to stay a part of the Mormon community while you're questioning. It feels as if our questions and doubt is viewed as a cancerous to the religion and must be removed. Those of us who leave do have a lot of anger, and anger is part of the grieving process. As you know, Mormonism defines so much of your life, and as you're leaving the church, you have to try to figure out who you are without it. And anger is a part of that. And I think anger... So having this room for unbelief and doubt, to allow people to help process that anger, to know that we still have a community while we're there, I think will do a lot to help those like me who have had a faith crisis and chose to leave the church. In conclusion, I just want to say that because of how much Mormonism defines so much of your life, that's what brings it more than just a religion. It's a lifestyle. It's a community. It's a heritage. It's a history. And those things don't leave you once you leave the church. Thank you.
Okay. This is going to get off. Emily Urban, hi. My story, I grew up, again, in a good, big, urban family. Big Mormon family. my mom has a long history of Mormonism, and my dad was a convert. My mother's side of the family, like, we have ancestors who converted in the early years of Mormonism and trekked across the country and came here and helped settle places in Idaho. So I claim the pioneer stories as kind of my own heritage, and that's something that I grew up learning stories from my grandparents, learning stories from my mother. And that something that I think is really beautiful about Mormonism is how we are connected to our families, of how much that is a part of who we are, of how we care about hearing those different stories and the different struggles and the different paths that those stories have taken. And my mom, so this kind of ties into, like, kind of part of who I am right now. But my mom, when she got the prompting to marry my dad, it was during the hymn, I'll Go Where You Want Me to Go, Dear Lord. And she grew up here in Orem, mostly. Was born in Boise, but she grew up in Orem. And so we have a long history of Utah Mormons in my mom's side of the family. And my dad grew up in California and Vegas and mostly in Arkansas. And after they got married, they lived the furthest away from everybody else in our family. So my poor mother didn't really get to stay close to her family, didn't really get to stay close to her her siblings, who she was already close to, and but luckily, everywhere that we lived growing up, so I lived in West Virginia, was where I was born. We lived in New Jersey for a little while. We lived in Texas for a while. We lived in Indiana, and now my parents live in Pennsylvania area. So it was really hard for my mom to be far away from everyone, but somehow all the places where we lived ended up being places that my grandmother needed to do family history research for our ancestors and things. And so it was really neat that even though we couldn't be close to our family, we could still learn more about the family that we lived, that came before us, and learn about their stories while we were living other places. And it was also really interesting, as we lived in all these different places growing up Mormon, to see the different kinds of Mormon, and but also see that family was still that good connector, that there are still things that were the same everywhere else, even though things were different. So in my after high school, I really struggled in knowing where I wanted to go, what I wanted to do, and both of my parents are BYU alumni, and so it was always kind of expected that I would go there. And my two older sisters were at BYU, and I really struggled with where to go and what to do, because I have always had this independence of, just because my family does it doesn't mean that I needed to do it. And that's something else that, yes, it's my own independent drive, but it's also something that my family cultivated, was that press for personal revelation, that drive for finding what's true to your heart, finding what speaks to you and where you need to go for yourself. And so I ended up in Utah after all. And where I was for basically all of my 20s, and it was good to get to know the people here, and good to get to know again more about families and things. Different life experiences happened while I lived here. One being that I got married at a really young age to someone who I thought I knew but didn't know really well, it turns out, and so that lasted a year. And so then it was interesting to experience what Mormon culture became from the eyes of being a divorced single woman in Provo, Orem, and it's just interesting to me the different stories that are told with that, how people treat you differently, how they find out that, oh, your life wasn't like the perfect standard, you did certain things and then life happens, you know. So it was difficult, but I still made it work, and still had a really good relationship with the people that I served and in the singles wards that I was in at the time. And there is just some things that happened, though, that just kind of disconnected me and my thought process from, like, I started to feel like I had lost my community, like, because of being divorced and because of having different life experiences. And but luckily my family was still around, and I had good friends, and they still helped me feel like I could be myself regardless of however my life took me. And it's interesting the kind of identity crises you go through when you feel like you're losing your community. And so I've taken a lot of time over the last few years really assessing the things that I still love and the things that are still mine. And the one thing that I continue to cling to that's kind of guided me my whole life, that I totally attribute Mormonism to, that I still think is the 11th article of faith, and claiming the privilege of worshiping Almighty God according to the dictates of our own conscience, and allowing all mankind the same privilege, worshiping how, where, or what they may. And that just gives me peace and comfort, knowing that I can do that for myself, and leaving room for other people to follow their hearts as well, and follow what they feel. And so that's kind of what Mormonism still means to me, and what I cling to, along with how important my family is. And I think that's something that even though I've left the church, and I don't go to church. I've had my name removed. I still have the heritage of my pioneer ancestry. I still have the connection with my immediate family. I still have connections with people who are still very faithful, who still love me, and who still honor, you know, that we are brothers and sisters, and the beauty of being able to share our different stories together. And I think it's important that we continue to have a dialogue to leave that room for people to still claim who they feel they are. And so that's why part of me still feels like I can say that I'm Mormon, because of my family connections, because of how I feel, because it still rings true to me, even though I'm not going to church on Sunday and doing all the XYZ things or whatever. It's still a piece of my heart, and I think that it always will be. And I like to keep that dialogue going, that those who feel the same way can also keep it a part of theirs. So that's all I got to say. Thanks.
All right, we'll try that. So I was born in Ogden in 1970, and my dad went to medical school right here at the University of Utah, and some of my best and most cherished childhood memories are living in Bountiful and experiencing everything that comes from feeling like you're part of a tight-knit group with a fantastic sense of community and a real way of relying on yourself, but also knowing there's a huge safety net there for you should you need it. In 1978, preparing for baptism, those of you that are of the same age I am probably recognize this book. I don't know why I've kept it all these years, particularly given the trajectory my life has taken, but I suspect it has a lot to do with the fact that there's an inscription from my grandmother on the inside. She writes, "Dear Jennifer, today is a very important day in your life. You are making some very important covenants to our Heavenly Father. May you always remember them and keep them in your prayers. We love you as your father and mother love you. We want to always do those things that are right as your Heavenly Father wants you to. Always live up to the gospel standards, Jenny, and you will choose the right. All our love, Grandpa and Grandma." Fast forward a few years later when, as was the custom of the day, primary children graduating and moving on to young men's and young women's were asked to recite an article of faith during sacrament meeting. I chose Article 13, not because it's the longest, although that's part of it because I'm an overachiever, but also because I really liked what it had to say. "We believe in being honest, true, chaste, benevolent, virtuous, and in doing good to all men. Indeed, we may say we follow the admonition of Paul. We believe all things, we hope all things, we have endured many things, and hope to be able to endure all things. If there is anything virtuous, lovely, or of good report, or praiseworthy, we seek after these things." And it was odd, as I were preparing my remarks last night and writing everything down, that most of that article of faith still came to me. Some of the words were a little bit sketchy, but after all this time, I still remembered the crux of it, and I really began to ask myself why. So I wrote down what values come directly from this article of faith, and just brainstorming fairly quickly, I came up with integrity, service and hard work, optimism, endurance, and self-improvement, and the belief that you can someday attain perfection. So I wanted to kind of run through these values and talk about how they've really informed my life and how they still continue to inform my life, even though traditional Mormonism and the practice of faith and belief in a higher being at all is something that is not part of my life anymore. So if we talk about the idea of integrity, that first value that I mentioned, to me, how I learned this as a child and how I took it with me as an adult was that I needed to learn to trust that still small voice, that I needed to have the courage to stand up for what I knew to be right despite any opposition that may occur. Then, when I was a child, that meant telling the truth, And as I suspect a lot of 8 and 9-year-olds do, I had a really big problem as a liar. I did. And I lied about everything, even if it didn't matter, even if it wasn't important. One particular moment that sticks out because it was so awful is I was also and still am a voracious reader. I love reading. And I had checked out this thick volume of fairy tales from my elementary school library, Leo J. Muir, for anybody from Bountiful. And I had read the entire book cover to cover except for one story. I didn't like The Nightingale. I've never liked that fairy tale. I always skip it. And so I did. And I didn't give it a second thought. And my parents were surprised how quickly I'd gotten through the book and said, "Hey, are you sure you read everything?" "Oh, yeah, I totally read everything." I didn't forget that I had skipped The Nightingale. I knew, and I just electively chose not to be truthful about that. But the lessons I had been teaching at home, the guilt that I suffered from that small lie, prompted me to confess to my dad, "You know what? Yeah, I really didn't. I really didn't read that whole thing." And my parents had previously said, "Well, you know, if we catch you lying again, we're going to have to take a lot of privileges away from you." And so I knew that by confessing to that lie, I was going to face a huge loss of privileges. But I did it because I couldn't live with the guilt of doing something that I knew to be wrong and letting that just stand. Fast forward to my life as an adult, and this same lesson of integrity sticks with me. When I was in grad school working on my master's in communication studies, I got very interested in Mormon feminism. I was interested in ways that Mormonism traditionally and historically has actually had a very big and open space for feminism, and that it has only been fairly recently in modern times that that has systematically been erased from church history in what I believe to be a very pointed attack. And so I was writing an article. I was able to get it accepted for publication in the Journal of Feminist Studies and Religion that is put together by the Harvard Divinity School, and I was just so very proud of myself. And I sat down and talked to my dad, and I said, "Hey, I'm writing some stuff that the church probably isn't going to like." He said, "Okay," and that big breath that he gave me. And he said, "Well, do you believe in what you're writing?" And I said, "Yeah." He's like, "Are you telling the truth?" I said, "Yes." I said, "Dad, if the wrong people read this, I could get excommunicated." And my dad, who is the best person on the planet, looked at me and said, "If you know it's true, if you believe it in your heart, then you have to write it." And this is from a faithful LDS man. That integrity that I credit the church and my family with teaching me is still a part of my life, even though faith in the actual religion has left. Another part of that value that I gained from the 13th Article of Faith is that of service, that you need to be of use to others. As a child, as a person in Young Women's, there were service projects all the time, tons of service projects in Young Women. We would spend lots of time in what are now called assisted living facilities. Back then, we called them nursing homes. We would visit people, strangers that we didn't know. We would paint nails. We would comb hair. We would, for reasons I don't understand, fight to be on the waiting list to work at the tuna factory. I don't know what that was about, but it was the awesome job. We had to do that. We would do yard work for free for people, for neighbors. And that was a huge part that I credit Mormonism with really drilling into me. You know, of course, anytime you're talking about childhood influences, yes, I do credit Mormonism, but I also credit how Mormonism was practiced within my own family structure growing up. And service was a very important part for both my parents. Fast forward now, and I find myself involved in tons of service projects without even really thinking about it. I have been teaching Kung Fu to 5- and 6-year-olds for the past 8 years, and I do that for free. It's a volunteer at a community location that we have in Las Vegas where I live now. I have been, for the past 4 years, volunteering as a speech and debate coach for a middle school in the Las Vegas area. I know everyone on our street. Nobody is Mormon. on that particular street. There are some around the corner. But on our particular street, I know everyone. We exchange food. I have a huge apricot tree that is a beast of a harvest every summer. And everyone on the neighborhood lot gets jam and cobblers. And I'm involved. I'm engaged in service that I absolutely credit to my Mormon upbringing. Optimism. Right? If you know anything about Mormons, you know that we're a pretty happy lot. And everything's got, you know, a shiny surface to it or a silver lining to the darkest cloud. And what was drilled into me as a child was to really be grateful for what you have. And not only to be grateful, to be happy, to be optimistic. Because however bad you thought you had it, there was someone else who was struggling to attain what you were taking for granted. When I was young and growing up, my dad was what he calls a late bloomer. That it wasn't until he was married with four children that he figured out what he wanted to do with his life. So one day when I came home from elementary school, I was in first grade. I came home from first grade in North Ogden, and I walked into the house, into the kitchen, and people were freaking out. My younger siblings were jumping up and down. My parents were hugging each other, and I was kind of, you know, what's going on? And my dad had received a letter that said he had been accepted into medical school. And so that was fantastic, and I joined in all the revelry, and I think I would have been less excited if I had realized that meant we were moving to Bountiful, which we did in the middle of second grade. And so growing up, my dad, who when he got accepted to medical school, had four children, and then two more would come later, and then lots more later, but that's a whole different story. And we didn't have a lot of money growing up. And so things that a lot of my friends took for granted, I never had the opportunity to do. And perhaps the most painful realization was in my teen years when everyone in Young Women, and I don't mean most, I mean everyone in Southern California where we had moved, was taking dance lessons, dance class. And I couldn't do it. There was no money in the family budget for that. I got to take piano from the bishop's daughter. Which was fantastic. She was a great teacher, but she didn't charge very much. We already had a piano, and I wanted to play the drums. I wanted to do something rock and roll, but that did not happen. And so at the time, being a fairly sullen teenager, this was the worst thing ever, and I couldn't imagine. And my parents sat down and said, "We know you're disappointed. We know that you're missing out on what you think are fantastic opportunities, but more will come. What I'd like for you to do now is look around and look at the life you have. This is your life. And you can either accept that and see the good in what you have, or you can complain about everything and miss out on all the joy." And that really, really stuck with me. Now, I take that mentality, and I very much connect it to a book written by Ben Sherwood called The Survivors Club. I'm not sure if any of you have read that or not, but it is really a fantastic read. It's a nonfiction, a bit of a scientific look into why bad things repeatedly happen to some people and other people seem to go through with a charmed life. And he makes this argument that it really, and of course, there are glaring exceptions. This is not to suggest that you just put on a happy face and everything is fine. We all know and have life experiences that tell us otherwise. But one of his examples that really stuck with me is, how do you frame the events that happen to you? The example, or one of the examples that he gives in this book, is there are these people who are in a bank, and they're there to just withdraw funds, and a robbery takes place. Someone gets shot. They don't die, they just get shot. And in talking with people who had been shot, he really kind of came to the conclusion that there are two different ways you can go. A lot of people were like, "I can't believe this happened to me. I can't believe I got shot. I'm always, if someone's going to get shot, it's going to be me." And a lot of people were like, "Oh, I'm so glad I only got shot in my arm. It could have been so much worse." And those shifts really connect to this idea of optimism for me. And it is very much how I live my life. When something bad happens to me, and I've had a few bad things happen to me, for whatever reason, personality makeup, family structure, Mormonism, all of it has an impact on me that leads me to say, "Ah, yes, but it could have been so much worse." Another thing that I wanted to talk about is the idea of endurance, particularly what I believe to be the very Mormon way of looking at endurance. Endurance, as I'm defining it, is really to persevere in the face of persecution. Okay, when I was growing up in the church and learning all of the lessons about our history and the people who have shaped Mormonism to be what it is, one of the big takeaways for me is that if you're not being persecuted, you're not doing it right. And so the idea that you are singled out and challenged repeatedly and openly and often violently means that you are pursuing the straight and narrow. It means you're doing the right thing. When I was a child and a teenager, especially in Southern California, we moved to Southern California when I was 10, and I had a very rough realization that Utah Mormons and California Mormons are apparently two subspecies. I had an example when I was there that one of my friends, her older sister, was getting engaged, and she was getting engaged to a boy from Utah. And they had met at BYU, and his family was aghast that he was marrying a California Mormon because he should be marrying a Utah Mormon. And that's just funny in a whole other way. But being in Southern California, not being with the tremendous amount of Mormons that I grew up with, made a big difference to me. And there were many, many instances where I would hear Mormon jokes or misconceptions or outright lies about the church that I was so much a part of at the time. And it was difficult. When I was 16 or 17, I'm not entirely sure, I had a boyfriend who was not Mormon. And his family identified as Christian and just sort of non-denominational Christian, but very devout. And we dated for a couple months until he broke up with me. And I was like, what? And he broke up with me because his parents said that I was religiously misguided. That as a Mormon, they didn't want their son dating me. And so, being the good Mormon, enduring to the end like I knew I should, I decided to share that in Fast and Testimony meeting. Seriously. It was awkward and strange, and the politics of high school, it got back to him even though he wasn't in the church, so that was a whole nother can of worms. But I learned to stand up for what I believe in, regardless. I learned to harness that pioneer heritage that I have to say, if they could make it, then I can get through this. Now, let me tell you, as an ex-Mormon, this little skill comes in handy. Being able to choose the right, which is not always one thing, which is not always a very specific thing, which is not always the thing that the church tells you it is difficult. That I have been shamed by some family members, some close, some extended. I have been called out as being problematic and stirring the pot. I joke that I am the black sheep of the family. And what has been difficult, in particular for my mother to accept, she is very devout and very upset and convinced to her core that at some point I will see the light and come back. That is not happening. But she is convinced that at some point it could happen. And if you circle back to the optimism I talked about earlier with Mormonism, she's going to think that forever. But it's been a difficult thing to try to get her to understand that the very things that you taught me as a child, the very tenets of Mormonism, make me devout in my decision now to have left the church. Because of Mormonism, I see myself as a pioneer. An ex-Mormon pioneer, but a pioneer nonetheless. And finally, self-improvement. Mormonism isn't Mormonism unless you're attaining something better. You're building a better, bigger you. Jennifer 2.0 is coming soon. And it's something that I really like. And it's to be honest, a double-edged sword. There are times where I feel so much pressure that can I just enjoy the moment and say, I am good enough. But then that still small voice whispers, nah, you could be so much better. Okay, I hearken it back to the idea of the parable of the talents that I heard so many times growing up in primary and in young women. You don't just squander it. You don't just hide your talent. You take it and you use it and you make it bigger and better and more. And I find myself doing that now. I mentioned earlier that I'm a bit of an overachiever. I feel like I am always attaining. It's a huge part of my personality that has been either largely informed or at the very least complemented by my upbringing in Mormonism. I have a bachelor's degree. I have two master's degrees. I have a PhD. I have a black belt in Taekwondo and a black sash in Kung Fu. I am a tenured professor. I am married. I have two children. My husband is also a professor, and we were able to stagger our teaching schedules so that our children have never been in daycare. I feel like I'm sort of the living unicorn of what you can be. And would I have become those things without Mormonism? It's possible, I guess. But I credit Mormonism, and in particular my dad, as Mormonism was filtered through him, for making me achieve all of these things. To me, these are remarkable things, and I don't know that I would want to be a better me if it weren't for Mormonism. And I am forever grateful. I haven't even touched on all of the other Mormon things that are still a part of my life. Jell-O. Okay, I'm so serious. Okay, Thanksgiving isn't Thanksgiving unless there's raspberry Jell-O shoved with fresh raspberries, in part because my great-grandmother had a wonderful raspberry garden, in part because she would make it, but in part because it's Jell-O. Funeral potatoes, family night, putting family first, the Osmonds. Okay, my parents went to high school with Osmond siblings, and when we lived in Irvine in Southern California, I once sat behind Donny Osmond at steak conference. Okay? That is Mormon gold, people. My pioneer heritage, the fact that I really believe that baking solves everything. Okay? If you can whip up a dessert or bake some cookies or make something from scratch, because God forbid you actually buy it from the store, everything is better. I like to can. I like to make jam. I mentioned that apricot tree. It is both tremendous excitement for me in the summer and also this daunting task because there are just so many. So when I think back to who I am, even though I've resigned the church, and there are a million reasons for that. We can talk about it at another time or specific questions if you have them. But my lack of belief does not erase my identity. One of my sisters, who is the most devout Mormon you will ever meet, she is like the textbook Mormon of what you'd think the best stereotypical Mormon should be. She's very faithful. She has three beautiful children. Her husband has been a bishop. And she was visiting and staying with us and my family at Thanksgiving last year. And she was with us for a few days, and she came to the Kung Fu class, and she came to watch me deliver something to some friends, a same-sex couple who just gotten married and had twins. And I'm doing all the things that I do in just my life. And she says, "Geez, Jenny, if you had belief, you'd be a great Mormon." And that's absolutely true. But the reality is, I am a Mormon. You just won't see me at church. Thank you. Okay, so we can go ahead and open it up for questions, if any of you have them. Yes. Because I'm a cultural anthropologist, it's super easy. Because I embrace so many different things, and even as a kid, I was so fascinated with different traditions and religious and cultural expressions, and so Easter for me is very much a time of renewal, of rebirth. I am very interested in some aspects of paganism, and so the pagan calendar is important to me, and the solstice is important to me. So that one was actually an easy fix. I had a harder time with Christmas, to be honest. I really did. That I kept displaying the nativity set year after year after year because, well, I like that story. But then I don't even know what happened or why it set it off, but one particular year I was setting it up, and it just didn't feel right. It didn't feel right. And no disrespect to those of you here that absolutely believe in the divinity of that story. It's a great story. But it made me uncomfortable. So now, in perhaps self-disclosure that's not going to make a lot of sense, where I used to put the nativity set is now my Star Wars Christmas tree.
Hi,
Actually, holidays are kind of a hard thing for me personally, with or without religion. There's been a lot of trauma in my family for various reasons that I don't want to go into here. But so while we're close, we aren't close at the same time in a lot of ways. And I'm single. I'm not dating. I don't have a significant other. I'm not married. I don't have kids. I don't want to have kids. So holidays like that just seem more important for people who have those than they do for me. And so most of the time, usually, what I actually find myself doing is latching on to, like, I'll do stuff with my family, but I also do things with my other family, and that's the family that I've chosen. And sometimes that means that I go to Mass on Christmas Eve, and sometimes that means, and my birthday's around Easter, and sometimes it actually lands on Easter because I'm March 31st baby. And so usually around Easter time is when, like, my best friend and I will go camping or to do something like that. It's, for me, those holidays are really about staying close to the people I love, both my immediate family and the family that I've chosen.
Yeah, and so mine is kind of a mixture of the two a little bit, because my faith transition has gone all over the place, and right now I'm a lot more secular, and holiday is a holiday. It's just whatever you make of it. My again, talking about my mother, always had fun with all the little holidays and all the big holidays, and really it's more about, like, to me, the holidays are about making sure that you're communicating with the people that you care about. Even if it's just doing the silly things like finding a local egg hunt or just sending some random Facebook picture or something, you know, the holidays to me are just another excuse to express your love to the people that you care about. And that's kind of what I've done with each of the different holidays. So another question? Go ahead.
I'm also from Las Vegas.
And I'm currently living in the San Francisco area.
And I wonder if maybe part of that is living in Utah County.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to maintain that because it's so much all around.
That's a big yes.
Yeah.
For me.
This is, so My I have three younger siblings. They all have also left the church, and my brother lives here in West Valley. And his girlfriend, who will soon one day be his wife, she grew up around here and, like, in Salt Lake, and just, you know, talking to her about her, because she was also baptized at 8, and then she's not an active believing, but she doesn't feel that drawn either. And I think a large part of, and it was one thing we actually discussed before I came over today, was because of her experiences, because, you know, she's surrounded by it all the time, and she's interacting with people who are in the Mormon faith all the time. It's, you know, it's already a part of her life subconsciously that she's not realizing. And, you know, for me, I lived in Utah for 5 years that I can remember. I've lived in Nevada most of my life. And, you know, being in Nevada, you really have to kind of seek out the Mormons and seek out that community. And it is kind of there is a difference between those who live in Utah and those who live in Nevada, and trying to build that community with them outside of Zion.
So, well,
why am not? Whereas
Yes.
You're probably in an area where if you claim Mormonism,
it is. No, I've got something. Yeah, go ahead. So the bulk of, I've only been in San Francisco area for the last year. I have been in Utah County for the last, I was there for 14 years, 15 years, the bulk of my faith transition and especially my exit. And it was so important to me while living here to still have that connection. Because again, it was so much a part of my identity that I had people who, even when I was just not going occasionally, you know, like the, I would have an opinion about something, or I would talk to them about what I missed at church or what was spoken about in conference, and they, we would have this dialogue, and whenever I would pipe up with my thoughts, they told me that I didn't have a say. No, I'm okay, I promise. Because I wasn't there all the time. Because even though I would still go to the activities, even though I was seeking these dialogues, I wanted to know what was being taught. I wanted to still be a part of, like, I still felt like I was a part of it. And it was very hurtful that I had people telling me that I wasn't, because I wasn't going, because I wasn't practicing, because I wasn't doing whatever it was. But me personally, even though in Utah County, yes, it's around me, it was everybody, majority, probably 80% of the people that I worked with, and, you know, people forgot that there are people who don't believe in Mormonism, that there are people here who are like that. And I don't know, like for me, it was still important here to still claim Mormonism, even though I have exited.
And that's also why I talked about at the end wanting to expand Mormonism to include those who question, doubt, and have unbelief. Because there's no reason why you can't claim to be Mormon. Mm-hmm. There is none.
And for me in particular, this is a long journey because I went through a really clear love-hate relationship with Utah and with Mormonism. And for years, I didn't even want to come here because gross, why would I? and then I didn't want to, you know, claim any part of Mormonism because I had huge issues with so many of the theological tenets. And so, honestly, I don't claim Mormonism to others. I claim it for myself because part of that journey has been, you know what, Mormonism, you don't get to take that identity from me because I don't believe in X, Y, and Z anymore. Because all this other stuff that's part of who I am, part of wonderful childhood memories, part of creating my worldview and how I see myself and how I interact with others, you don't get to take that because I chose to opt out of certain parts of it. And that's been, honestly, relatively new. And since that sort of coming to peace with all of that, I love Utah. I'm up here all the time. It is the home of my childhood. It is the home where those really formative years from 4 to 10, we're here. This place is awesome. I bring my kids up here, but I wouldn't want to raise them here because I have too many friends who struggle with that, who have left Mormonism, but their kids are facing that kind of bullying. And I know that happens. When I was in elementary school in Bountiful, we knew every kid who wasn't a Mormon. We knew every single one. And we made sure they knew we knew, which is horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, she's totally awesome, so she's going to publish someday. You guys keep an eye out for that, because it'll be good.
That's right.
She knows her stuff. It's one of the three big threats, you know. You should be careful. Me too. I think that's a really fantastic point. And, you know, I don't have data on this, but I'm very certain it's completely true. I do think that there are so many more like us who are still in the church, and they stay silent because of the threat of being pushed out, or the threat of excommunication or disfellowship, or the threat of being on the out when they really want to be in the in. And I think that it's a terrible disservice to the community, because diversity of voices makes you stronger. It's not something that should be feared, and that is not what I learned in Mormonism. It's very much about, this is the narrative, and you need to stick with it.
Danielle, I had a similar experience with my mom. It happened a few years ago. It was when Kate Kelly and John DeLynn were getting excommunicated. And I was talking to my mom, and I called her crying, literally crying, because those things to me were so powerful, because I felt like it was just, because I was like you. I actually left the church when I was living in Rupert, Idaho. If you don't know what Rupert, Idaho, it's an 800-person town, 95% Mormon. Like, I was already the weird girl from Las Vegas, and then to be the weird girl that left the church from Las Vegas, it was really hard to be pushed out. And so I called my mom crying about this, because I just felt like this was just another instance of me being pushed out of my community. And my mom, before she hung up on me, told me, "But you don't believe anymore. Why are you still so concerned about this? Why don't you just leave?" That was actually kind of the moment that I decided to send in my resignation letter. And it's taken a long time, and it's taken lots of conversations with my mom. But one of the things that I've had to tell her is that I am still her Mormon daughter that she raised. She's not a bad mom because I didn't follow the Mormon track. That all those things that she taught me to think for myself, to trust myself, to ask questions, to, you know, she always framed it in my childhood as asking God what he should do, but, you know, it's still the same principle. It's taken a long time, but she's finally come around to the fact that even though I'm not in the church anymore, I'm still the same person. I still have those values that the community has, and that she taught me when I was a girl. So I feel your pain. I understand.
Yeah, I feel your pain too. being a part of being bisexual as well, like I or not as well, being bisexual myself, I feel like it's. There's a lot of hurt around, especially over the last year with different policy changes and with the different things that have been happening in the Mormon community, with the youth of Utah specifically, with the suicides, suicide rate increasing, and the homelessness and those different problems. It is really sad and hurtful to see the community that I grew up with, the community that I grew, that I was raised in. It feels like pushing more and more people out. That's what it feels like to me. That's what it feels like, what I've seen. That's what you've expressed. That's what other people have expressed. And I think it is important for those of us who still feel Mormon, like, to, again, like, to speak up, like what we've been talking about, so that we can house those youths who are seeking refuge, you know, so we can still have a place for those people, so we can cultivate that love and save lives, essentially, that way. You know, like, I think it's, it as hurtful as it is to hear from somebody, yeah, you're not Mormon anymore, you know, it's important for us to process why we're giving people who say such things the authority over us to tell us that we're not Mormon anymore. And as difficult as it is, we do need to say, no, like, this is who I am. This is how I feel. We don't even need to give reasons why, but we're up here giving reasons why to help empower other people so that they can also have a voice and share that love. So thank you for sharing some of your stories.
We got two.
Yeah,
so,
that's
or three.
Good.
Yeah.
I'd just like to make two quick points in validation. I grew up as a local Southern Baptist in North Ogden, mm-hmm. and I do think there's a very different attitude about non-Mormons and ex-Mormons.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
You should make a panel. I would totally come hear your story. That sounds amazing.
So then it was.
I got a question for you.
Yes. I haven't had to navigate that at all, because although I formally resigned only 2 years ago, I stopped attending and told my mom that I was through with the church when I was 25. And then I didn't get married until I was 29. I had my kids when I was 31 and 33. And so they're experiencing Mormonism from the margins, because I'm also the oldest of six that I grew up with as a child, and most are Mormon and extended family, cousins, so they see that interaction. But if you ask them what they are, because my son isn't as interested, but my daughter, who's 12, she really likes the label. She's like, well, what am I? Because at school, people want to know what I am. And I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, well, what am I? And I said, okay, if you need a label, let's go with secular humanist. That's a good label. And so she's like, well, what is that? So we did some research and we figured it out. And now she gets herself into trouble by telling people that she believes in science and why don't they? And which I am tremendously proud of, but also I worry for her. Because even in the part of Vegas that we live in, it's a little more conservative. There are a lot of, let me quantify that. When you say there are a lot of Mormon churches, I forget I'm here, so there's not a lot in Vegas. But there are more than you would think. That without even trying hard, I can name 7 ward buildings that are probably a 10-minute drive from my house. And so there are a lot of Mormons that she goes to school with. And she's she says all the things I only thought as a child. And part of me is again, immensely proud of her for that, but I'm also worried because she's lost friends, and people have said, well, I can't be friends with you if you don't believe in God. And that's just so inappropriate on so many levels. But I haven't had to deal with that. I do have another sister who did leave the church, and she left when I think her oldest was 14, 15 maybe. And so that was difficult because she started doing all the things that she had taught him you can't do, like
drinking wine and having coffee. And my nephew was just mortified because those were horrible things. And that was it was a rough transition for all of them because they had been taught one thing for so long, and then their parents changed their minds, and the kids were like, what? So that was tough. So I feel for you without having experienced it, because that must be very difficult.
I mean, I talked a little bit about, you know, my relationship with my mom, and you know, my dad, he's older. There's a large age gap between him and my mom, and I've always been closer to my mom, and you know, so my dad's really, really set in his ways. So, you know, he loves us, he accepts that, you know, we all have left the church, but it's not a topic that we really get into a whole lot. But my mom and I talk all the time, and it's been kind of a really hard relationship to navigate, especially since I was always the kid she never thought that she had to worry about. My oldest younger brother and my middle brother, both of them, we knew that they were going to leave the church, like not step foot into a church building when they were 18 years old. They only went to church in their teenage years because my mom required it to live under her roof. But you know, I was full on in testimony, everything. And so I think that was the heart. You know, she accepted my brothers, I think, a lot easier than she accepted me. But it's really, for me, I found that just having that open dialogue with them and to share the good things that I'm doing and with my mom especially, kind of reminding her that I'm doing the things that she taught me, even if I'm not following the Mormon rules, as I like to call them. And so I think that's just, and you know, I'm really sorry that that's how you're feeling, because I know. Right. Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, and you know, I think my mom's kind of hoping for that too. She's just stopped saying it to me. But yeah, I think that's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. So. I have some relatable things, but my experiences that kind of happened like that with my parents happened even while I was a devout Mormon. being the third of six kids, you know, like they all hoped that we'd all go to BYU, we'd all do the different things. I was the first child, and then also on my mom's side of the family, the first grandchild to not go to BYU. And yeah. I had all these different ideas of what I wanted to be and what I wanted to do and what that meant and the different paths. And for so long, when my parents were not financially able to support me with my different decisions over the years. And it was hard because I would see them support some of my other siblings who I felt were living more the better perfect life, like the Mormon life. And even though I was still devout, you know, like, you know, so there was that experience. Plus, I was the child who got married and got divorced, got married not in the temple, but like still got married. And so that was happy, but it was still wasn't quite what they expected. And, you know, but they still loved me through everything and all that. And so what I've learned through the years looking back and also just with having conversations with them is sometimes, yes, it does feel like it's because you're the odd one out. It feels like that you're not living up to their expectation or whatever, but you never really know what they're thinking and what they're going through and their reasons behind what they're doing. So I would just maybe take what you're feeling and maybe just set it aside and say, yeah, this is how I feel about it. And if you can talk to your parents about it, great, because I have had, I mean, this was like 10 years ago, so I have had good conversations with my parents, like looking back, and they apologized for realizing how painful that was for me and how they support me now in other ways. You know, like the relationships are tricky. And so, you know, that's just my thought for you is that maybe it isn't even about this. Sure, it could still be, but maybe it's not. And maybe think about that a little bit.
I think that when you were talking about that your parents kind of seem baffled that you're not falling apart. I can definitely relate. My mom is very much that way with me, and I think sometimes she seems stunned that I'm a good mother. I'm a great mother. I am a great mother. I have no false modesty about that at all. And I think that she she thinks that because I'm such a strong feminist, I'm just going to like hose my kids off in the backyard and move on. And she genuinely seems stunned but pleased that I'm doing that, and she seems perplexed and baffled that you're cooking dinner for your family, and you're making this cake that they want from scratch, and you're putting things on Pinterest, and why aren't you Mormon again? You know, kind of a thing. And I think from my own experience, I think it comes from that Mormonism can be a really insular community. And this is such an embarrassing story because it just seems so ridiculous. But it wasn't until I think I was 28 and I was visiting my boyfriend, now my husband, who had just taken a job in Las Vegas. And I was still in California working on my PhD. And I came to visit and he said, you know, I'm going to go to a colleague's house for dinner. And I thought you'd, you know, like to meet him. He calls himself an ethnic Mormon. And I'm like, what? And he said, yeah, he grew up Mormon. He's, you know, Mormon, but he hasn't been Mormon for a really, really long time, but he still has sort of elements of that. And I said, sure, that'd be great. And the venue ended up getting moved, and this guy was going to be there, but at another person's home. And the home that we went to, we walked in the door. It was around Christmas time, and it looked just like the house I grew up in. It was a Christmas tree, and there were decorations, and the family was interacting, and everyone loved each other. And I'm embarrassed to tell you that I was shocked, because this was not a Mormon family. So how does that happen? You know, I really, whether I was aware, I was believing it or not, really believed that Mormons had the corner on happy families. And if you wanted a happy family, well, you better be Mormon. And if you're going to leave Mormonism, that's a risk that you might not have a good family. And it's embarrassing to be a fully formed grown adult shocked that a happy family she sees isn't Mormon. And it's because I hadn't stepped out of that culture growing up. And so I think that's still where my mom is. You know, she's still seeing that. She's still watching Fox News, so she's terrified of everything. And I think it's very, very sorry. I don't mean to be as glib as that sounded. She's very insulated in her Mormon faith and Mormon community. So outside is scary, even if it's a place of happiness, I think.
Sure, sure. no quotations necessary. It's subjective. You don't throw it back.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was my big fear, honestly. And when you choose to leave a community, as I did, that was in so many ways so helpful and supportive, you're taking on a much more difficult task for yourself. And so I've had to do additional things to make sure that my kids aren't missing out on that. I've had to organize service activities. The kids and I routinely go to Three Square, which is a food bank in Las Vegas that we work at. They volunteer at pet shelters. They're hoping, you know, when they get old enough, that they can volunteer in some of the places where there's a little much more autonomy. But service is definitely part of what they are expected and required to do, but that's coming from home. It's not an external force in addition. And it is difficult because there isn't a community. We tried other denominations, and it wasn't a good fit for us, and it felt forced, and then it made me feel uncomfortable. And so I'm really open and honest with my kids, and we talk about faith and what people believe all the time, and my kids will say, well, what's the answer to this? And my first question is always, well, what do you think? And so at one point, my daughter thought that heaven was going to be comprised of fluffy clouds with bulldogs playing pianos. And, I would go to that heaven. That sounds pretty cool. I'm very open and free with letting them find their own way and letting them know that whatever way they find is okay. And that you find people that support that and it's okay. But I do worry that I don't have that structure. It is harder to raise kids without an external group of authority. Like, there are some things that my kids do that I would have been killed for doing as a kid growing up in the Mormon church. And part of that was the authority that was ingrained in, or respect for authority that was ingrained in me. And my kids are very respectful, but they're also confident in their own voices. And so it's hard. There's not an easy answer, but if you make it a priority to teach all the good things that you were taught and just leave out the things that are not so great, and there are many, your kids will pick up on that, you know, and I think the fact that you even would support your daughter doing that kind of research is amazing, because I know some who would say, no, we're not doing, look at this, and this is bad, I don't want you in any part of that. So allowing them to kind of find their own way teaches them to trust themselves, and I think there's no better gift than that. So I think that's fantastic.
Do we have any other questions?
Thank you.
I've asked myself that same question. Even when Jennifer and I were talking about doing this panel a year ago, like, I really wanted to talk about it because it felt so personal. I'm like, yes, I'm Mormon. And then I was like getting ready for this and thinking about it all year, and I'm like, what about me is Mormon? And those things that, you know, we've talked about, those good things that Mormonism has taught us, we aren't saying that you can't get that other places. It's not mutually exclusive. I have wonderful non-member friends who have the same values that I do. We just came about it in different ways. Because those values were taught to me with a Mormon lens, I feel like that's what makes it positive. It's my heritage. It's my family history. And those values and those ideas came from the stories from the Book of Mormon. They came from the stories of Joseph Smith. They came, and that's uniquely Mormon to me.
So I think part of my positivity for the word Mormon comes from what Jennifer touched on earlier about that optimism, that make the best of things, like everything's here for a reason kind of concept. But more importantly, over the last decade at least, I have been on this journey to love myself more, to really kind of understand more who I am, trying to decide what that is, and kind of build from that. And I don't want to rewrite my history. I don't want to undo what has been me in the past and say, just because I don't believe in it now, just because there are some painful things that happened while I was devout, you know, like that, the pain also gives me more knowledge and gives me more hope for myself, and knowing that, okay, I've experienced that, I know what not to do for the future. So there's still a lot of love that I have. I'm one of those weird ex-Mormons that never really reached the angry phase during my exit, because of this quest that I've been on for so long, to just make sure that, to have good feelings for myself and make sure that I'm okay, and to try to have good feelings for those around me as well. So I think it is possible to, even if you are in a negative space with the word, to find ways of making it, if you still choose that it's part of your identity, to create a more positive relationship with just the label itself.
And I think for me, it's been a choice to actively reclaim that label. And unlike Emily, I had all the anger, and I still have part of the anger, and part of the anger fuels that, where I kind of say, you know what, you don't get to tell me how I can define myself. You don't get to tell me what Mormonism is. I get to decide. Like, I choose. It's mine. And not everyone buys into that, and I don't share that with everyone, because from where I'm sitting and the values that I have in my life, there are a lot of rightfully negative things that people associate with the Mormon Church and connection to policies, and they're abhorrent policies that shouldn't be. And so I don't want to be connected to that, but I can't and won't turn my back on my own history just because it's inconvenient for believers, if that makes sense. But that's kind of part of my personality anyway. So that's where I come down on that one. All right, well, thank you all so much. I know that for all three of us, this is the first time we've talked about these things in public. So you've been wonderful and fantastically supportive, and thank you very much.